Morant with a running start. Elevates. Ooh. Oh, it ducks. Oh, my goodness. Jonathan. Tie game in overtime. Gasol will turn his heat. It's good. Memphis on top. 17.
Coming out with three.
Count it.
A 15-point lead for Memphis. And Blake Griffin gets into it on the floor with Randolph. Hard to tell if there are any punches being thrown under there, but Griffin took exception to something. The officials break it up quickly.
Griffin. See, he just locked his arm and then kind of pulled him over. Zach falls down, and then, you know what, a little elbow there.
Oh, he's digging the elbow in.
Yeah, you know.
Welcome to Grits and Grinds, a Memphis Grizzlies podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. My name is Keith Parrish. The Grizzlies news is there are no Grizzlies games. The Grizzlies had their next three games postponed. That's after having Wednesday's game postponed. So they're missing four straight games due to their inability to have eight available players because of contact tracing, and also because Jaren Jackson Jr., Justice Winslow, Jontae Porter continue to be out. It is notable. This is one of the longest absences for any team. The Wizards are the other team that have missed this many games consecutively. And the Wizards still haven't played in over a week. The Wizards are having a legitimate COVID outbreak. They said they had at least seven positive tests. Chris Harrington is reporting the Grizzlies only have one positive test. But because of contact tracing, and this is, we're assuming this is contact with Jonas Valanciunas, the Grizzlies player who's been out, because of the contact tracing, there aren't enough available bodies. It seems peculiar and strange. In the absence of news and clarity on what things are going on, and I know, you know, and I know there are confidentiality issues with discussing which players have not just COVID, but, you know, any medical issues. But it's really weird that the Grizzlies had one guy, we assume Jonas Valanciunas, with COVID, and they said to go ahead and play the Martin Luther King Day game, the national TV game with the Suns, and if they have no other positive tests, why are they missing the next three games? Why did they fly to Portland only to call the game off if nothing different happened? Chris Harrington on the Daily Memphian podcast, he suggested maybe this is because the NBA has now started applying some new rules of how they administer the health and safety protocols. We have heard the reports of the new rules like, hey, now you really can't even do handshakes after the game and you can't talk, and we're going to enforce it by having team officials separate the teams post-game. So there really is no chance for players to talk together and be close enough to spread droplets and viral loads and all of that stuff. But it is weird. And if you want to be conspiratorial, it looks like they went ahead with the Martin Luther King Day game. Maybe they should not have. But regardless, the Grizzlies aren't going to play at the earliest until Wednesday against the Chicago Bulls. There are some benefits, you know, you can imagine for the Grizzlies where they are waiting for Jaren Jackson Jr. and Justice Winslow to return. I mean, we're coming up on, we're 2 weeks away from the one-year anniversary of the Justice Winslow trade. Will he make his debut then? I don't know. So maybe there is the benefit of the Grizzlies get a little bit healthier. Their road trip, though, seemed to be, you know, at a good time because they had a decent rhythm with getting a few wins. Obviously, they've won five games in a row. And the Trailblazers are without CJ McCollum, are without Yusuf Nurkic. Perhaps, probably McCollum will be back the next time they face. The Sacramento Kings are kind of circling the drain right now. They are by far the worst defensive team in the NBA. Seems like they've lost all hope and motivation. I mean, the Kings aren't just the worst defensive team in the league. They are right now the worst defensive team in the history of the NBA, I think. Their defensive rating is 120 or over 120, which is comically terrible. But anyway, the Grizzlies aren't going to lose, and I'm citing the Daily Memphian podcast again. They brought up the issue. Will this be the longest Grizzlies winning streak as far as time elapsed? Which I think is very, very funny. I looked this up. The Grizzlies' longest regular season winning streak in a single season is 8 games, which is honestly a little pathetic. They've accomplished that feat 4 times, but the longest as far as elapsed time, in 2013, the Grizzlies went 20 days without losing a basketball game because of the All-Star break. If the Grizzlies win their game against the Bulls this coming Wednesday, or if that game is postponed, then the Grizzlies will have elapsed 20 days in a season. And it will be the longest as far as calendar time win streak in the history of the franchise. So kind of a funny note there. It will not be the longest regular season winning streak if you combine the seasons. If you don't include playoff games, the franchise record for a winning streak is 11 games, but that stretches over 2 seasons, the end of the 2013-14 season and then the beginning of the 2014-15 season. And so if you want to ignore playoff games, you could say the Grizzlies actually went 7 months in 2014 without losing a regular season game. So there's a little fun historical note. I do think with the Grizzlies winning 5 straight games, and you listeners know the Grizzlies' win streak has a bunch of asterisks because, you know, they've been playing teams that aren't any good and are missing players. The Suns game was the first time they beat like a full strength squad, and that Suns team hadn't played in over a week because of their own issues with health and safety protocols. It is funny because now the Grizzlies are 7-6. They're over 500, which is great and all. And it seems like that momentum of talking positively, maybe overly positively, about the Grizzlies. The Ringer came out with a really awesome Grizzlies video. Kevin O'Connor broke down some of the strengths of Ja Morant and then some of the strengths of the supporting cast. It highlighted Brandon Clark's shooting issues, but just pointed out how, you know, all these good young guys, maybe slightly older rookies they've been drafting in Clark and then Bane and Tillman, really complement what the Grizzlies have going on. It was a very, very well done video. Perhaps overly optimistic about Tillman and Bane. I mean, I'm excited about Tillman and what we've seen the last 2 games, but a lot of it is the narrative building of you get the result, you pull out a close win over the Suns and the Sixers, and then now all of a sudden, like the Grizzlies hit a home run with Bane and Tillman. We don't know that yet. It's a little early to count the home run, but it is a fun video to watch. And again, it does a good job of highlighting the radical difference between Brandon Clark's shot, how in the regular season last season, before the COVID shutdown, he was shooting 40% from threes. And then when he came back in the bubble, his shot was different. And then now his shot is way different. Looking at those Brandon Clark stats that I've been talking about, I finally found it, or at least looked it up. I've been talking about how he's actually struggled in the paint and missed a lot of dunks. He, in fact, is tied for the league lead in most missed dunks this season. Brandon Clark has missed 9 dunks. By memory, 2 of them were fairly difficult alley-oops. A couple of them were blocked. The ones that were blocked, it was like, well, maybe go a little harder. And then the others were just legitimate, just kind of missed dunks, or he didn't catch an alley-oop cleanly. He has the second worst field goal percentage on dunks in the league behind Willie Cauley-Stein. Both Willie Cauley-Stein and Brandon Clark have missed 9 dunks this season. Willie Cauley-Stein shooting 68% on dunks. Brandon Clark shooting 70% on dunks. Brandon Clark, still his true shooting percentage, it's not good because of the free throws. And he's putting up those points and rebounds. And I think he looks very nice on defense, repeating myself. But it still feels like Grizzlies people are celebrating the results of the wins and kind of ignoring the way the team looks at times and the individual players at times. I mean, we know the Grizzlies are winning on the basis of their defense, which is great, and they're struggling to score and shoot. Like Brandon Clark right now, of the 201 NBA players who play 20 minutes a game or more, Brandon Clark is 178th in true shooting percentage. As far as front court players, he's third worst. LaMarcus Aldridge is struggling with his jumper. LaMarcus Aldridge and Darius Bazley are the two front court players to have a lower true shooting percentage than Brandon Clark right now. Other Grizzlies on this ignominious list, Tyus Jones is 189th out of 201 in true shooting percentage, which accounts for your field goal percentage, your three-point percentage, and your free throw percentage. We expect more from Tyus. And then Dylan Brooks. The cream rises to the top, if you will. Dylan Brooks is now 195th out of 201 players in true shooting percentage. We should probably talk about Dylan Brooks. I, on this podcast, have been saying consistently, Dylan Brooks is a solid contributor. Dylan Brooks is one of the Grizzlies' best players. I'm not worried about Dylan. I feel like he's playing better this season, making better decisions. I feel that way still. I tweet out some negative stats about Dylan Brooks, but that doesn't change my opinion. The negative stats about Dylan Brooks, if you look at all of his statistics since the beginning of last season, and if you throw out just the three games against the Timberwolves from last year, I know it's rude, it's not fair, but if you throw out those Timberwolves games, in the last year, and I'm including the play-in game, so we got 84 games. In those 84 games, Dylan Brooks averages 15.6 points per game on 14.7 field goal attempts. So basically 16 points on 15 field goal attempts. And he's under the Mendoza line. He's under 40% from the field, 39.5% field goals, 34.2% three-pointers, 78% free throws. If you turn it back to just since the trade deadline of last season, and that's including all games, I don't have to throw out any of those Timberwolves outliers where he lit up the Timberwolves last season. In the 36 games since the trade deadline last year, which also matches up with Dylan Brooks signing an extension, in Dylan Brooks' last 36 games going back into last year, he is averaging 16.1 points per game on 16.4 field goal attempts. So less points, fewer points than field goal attempts. And his field goal percentage is 37.6%. His three-point percentage, if you round it up, is 30%. It's like 29.95%. He's only shooting 73.6% on free throws. As you know, those are awful numbers. Basically inexcusable. Although before you get too upset or too worried about it, I mean, there is an excuse. I say it's inexcusable, but there is a big excuse that almost all of those games, Dylan Brooks has been like the second or third option on the Grizzlies. He's played several of those games, or a handful of them, without even Ja Morant. But most of those games have been without Jaren Jackson Jr. I want to say something like 27 of those 36 games, there's no Jaren Jackson Jr. I think some things Dylan Brooks did in the bubble were inexcusable. And I think some of the coaching staff decisions to leave him in the game and continue playing him was a little inexcusable. But I think this year he has changed, even though his shots aren't going in. So Dylan Brooks does not need to be the third option on the court at any time. Or maybe that's not true. He shouldn't be the third option on your starting lineup. He shouldn't be your third option in crunch time. Ideally, you have Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. taking up the scoring burden. And then you can have, I don't know, Brandon Clark or Jonas Valanciunas picking up some scoring. And he can be a third or fourth or fifth option on offense, and his efficiency will improve from that. So I do think the numbers are concerning, but it's not like freak out time yet. because he's been asked to do too much. And as long as he is looking for his teammates like he's been doing this year and keeping the bad shots down to a minimum, and you still need maybe kind of a wild guy on your team, an excessive confidence guy to get some stuff going. So I don't think Dylan Brooks is going to, he's not going to hurt the team long term or anything, despite this pretty big slump that is stretching into, maybe it's not a slump. Maybe this just is who he is. Finally, going back to the D'Anthony Melton did not play coach's decision from the Suns game. I still think it's super odd. Taylor Jenkins was asked about it, and he said basically exactly what I said he would say. So they just wanted to get a different look out there, maybe try some new things. I find it extremely hard to believe the coaching staff feels the Grizzlies' best chance at victory involves D'Anthony Melton not playing. If you want to go back to the conspiracy stuff about the Grizzlies missing games because of COVID, you know, would it make more sense if there was something going on with D'Anthony Melton and they just didn't report it? I mean, that's actually very unlikely. The penalties of screwing around with that would be so severe from the league. Maybe is it just some kind of discipline thing? We have to guess these things because the Grizzlies don't tell us anything ever about anything. And when we watch the games as fans, we find it hard to believe they would look at their roster and say, yeah, D'Anthony Melton, he's a guy we don't need to play. We should definitely play all these other players ahead of him. However, I haven't seen eye to eye with Taylor Jenkins and this coaching staff about the priority of players for a very long time. I mean, there was moments last season, like we forget about them because, you know, things are going pretty well, because the Grizzlies overachieved last season, because the Grizzlies are overachieving right now. You know, you give Taylor Jenkins the benefit of the doubt, and we should. These are minor complaints. These are, I listen to a Grizzlies specific podcast complaints, you know. So that's for us. We can have these complaints. But last year, if you remember, they didn't play D'Anthony Melton at the beginning of the season. It was like, oh, I thought this guy was going to be part of the rotation. He didn't get into the rotation until Ja Morant got hurt. And they needed some bodies. There were moments last year when my guy Kyle Anderson didn't play. There were moments in the bubble. I mean, a lot of them were foul trouble. But even with foul trouble, there were multiple games. I think there were two games in the bubble last year where Kyle Anderson played under 12 minutes. And I was just staring at the TV watching the Grizzlies games being like, how can you look at this team and think your best chance to win doesn't involve playing Kyle Anderson more? And that's how I feel about D'Anthony Melton. And we've proven that the coaching staff favors some other players. Last year, they were like, hey, let's play Solomon Hill instead. Maybe they were showcasing Solomon Hill. This year and last year, they were like, hey, Grayson Allen hit his first shot. Let's keep playing him. Let's play him 25 minutes. Let's close the game with him. Part of me deeply wonders or slash wishes maybe they're showcasing Grayson Allen. Maybe trying to build a little trade buzz because they want to make a move. I mean, if the Grizzlies do want to make a move, we highlighted him in the offseason. And the storyline this season has played out perfectly if you want to acquire him for very little, you know, draft capital. Buddy Hield is very available. If the Grizzlies hang out much longer, this Kings might give him away for almost nothing. Gorgui Dieng's been playing great, but we know he's that massive salary for matching purposes in a trade. And with the emergence of Xavier Tillman, you don't need to play Gorgui Dieng. Or here's a wild one for you radicals. With the emergence of Xavier Tillman and the good play of Gorgui Dieng, we don't need Jonas Valanciunas. I mean, the term need is relative. I like Jonas Valanciunas. He's hilarious. He's a great teammate. He's a good pick and roll partner with Ja Morant. But we don't care in the sense of the direction of the Grizzlies when we're looking at the players who are going to be here for a long time. Jonas Valanciunas is kind of outside that very short list. So maybe they would do a big trade. I'm not expecting or predicting a big trade. I think it's very unlikely. But if the Kings were to want to give away Buddy Hield, well, yeah, open arms. Let's do it. Let's get the guy in the door. Let's get a shooter in the door. The Grizzlies are winning the games with defense and with the worst shooting in the NBA, basically. Let's add a legitimate shooter, a 20-point-per-game scorer, a guy who maybe needs a new scene, a change of scenery. get involved with a team with some good culture. I'd be into that. Anyway, hope you guys are doing well. That's the whole show for today. Hope you have some fun plans over the next 4 days when there's no Grizzlies games. I don't know, go outside, take a walk, play with your kids, something like that. Anyway, you guys have a good one. Go Grizz.